We're holding on Memhe Omid Beis by the Mishnah. Now that we talked about how a person receives skila, so now the Mishnah continues. Kol haniskolin nitlin divrei Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says anybody who gets skila, also afterwards they hang his body on a beam, as we're going to discuss in the Mishnah how it's done. Well, actually, the details of how it's done are the details of how it's done are actually in the next Mishnah. Anyway, Divrei Rabbi Eliezer, v'chamayim say no, einin nitla elam agadif v'oivid avodah zarah. Of the people who get skila, everybody agrees that it's only one who gets skila, whose body is hanged afterwards, and we're going to see in the Gemara how we learn that. But Rabbi Eliezer holds it's everybody who gets skila. The Chum say only in the nitla elam gadif over avodah zarah, only somebody who blasphemed Hashem or who worshipped avodah zarah, and both of those are averus that a person is chayek skila. So only those two get hanged afterwards, but not anybody else who's chayek skila, as we'll see in the Gemara how they work it out. Continues the Mishnah. A man, when his body is hanged like that, they have him facing towards the people, in order that they should take a lesson from it and then know not to do this kind of thing themselves. A woman, when her body is hanged, is done facing towards the beam rather than towards the person, so as not to be mevazeh more than necessary. Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. The Chum say anyway, it's a moot point how they do it with a woman, because the Chum say, "Ho ish nitla veino ish nitlis." They say only a man's body is hanged, a woman, even if she's guilty of one of these averus, for which they say that a man's body would be hanged. They say a woman's body is never hanged anyway, even if she was guilty of one of those averus. Again, as we'll see in the Gemara. Omalahem Rabbi Yezer. So Rabbi Yezer says to the Chachamim, how could you tell me that women's bodies are not hanged? Dude, we had this story the other day, this story that Rashi told at great length on the Gemara on Mem Daled Amud Beis involving Shimon ben Shattach, where he and his Talmidim captured 80 Jewish women who were doing witchcraft in Ashkelon and executed them and hanged their bodies up. So we see that women's bodies are hanged. And in fact, on top of that, Rabbi Eliezer, in fact, Marshall points out, Rabbi Eliezer says, I have a proof for both of my dinim in this Mishnah from this. Because here, they weren't Megadif, they weren't Oved Avodah Zarah, they were guilty of witchcraft, which is neither of the above, and they were women, and you Chachamim are saying only for Megadif and Oved Avodah Zarah, and only men, and here we see it was women and a different Aveda, and still they hang their bodies. Amrulai, the Chum answered him, you know what, you can't really bring a proof from that anyhow. Shmoinim noshim tola. After all, that was on one single day Shimon ben Shattach hanged 80 witches. Ve'in don shnayim b'yem echad. We anyway know that you can't judge two people on one day, as we're going to learn in detail about that in the Gemara, because we want to have Beis Din give enough time to consider each individual verdict, so we don't want them to be rushing through things. So like this, if we so anyway, it wouldn't it would so anyway under normal circumstances, we anyway wouldn't judge 80 women on one single day. The fact that we did that must and now the Gemara is going to point out that you could judge a bunch of people on one day when they all did the same Aveda and it's all the same kind of Misa. Now over here, you could say, well, what's the problem? It's all the same kind of Misa, it's all Skila, and it's all the same kind of Aveda, witchcraft, so therefore it should be fine. But Rashi points out in the Gemara that no, the fact is there are different kinds of witchcraft. There's Oiv versus Yidoni, those are different kinds, and there's separate Isurim in the Torah, and therefore those you would have the din that Beis Din has to judge them separately. Tosfos adds, you have also there's Choyver Chover, there's various other kinds of Kishuf, so there's a lot of different kinds. And therefore, not necessarily, therefore, as it is, they wouldn't have been able to do it all on one day anyway. So like this, the fact that they did it all in one day was an unusual thing, as the Gemara is going to point out. Sometimes Beis Din has the ability to act beyond the usual rules of the law, but that doesn't prove that that under normal circumstances, the same way as under normal circumstances, not all 80 of them would have been judged on one day. The same way, under normal circumstances, they wouldn't have been hanged at all. First of all, because they're women, and second of all, because the aveda that they did isn't one that gets that punishment anyhow. Okay, in both things, the halacha is like the chachamim, so therefore only men and only when they're megadif and oved avodah zarah. So the Gemara says, Tanan Rabbanan, we learn in a braisa, let's figure out the details that we said in the Mishnah. The pasuk describes the pasuk goes as follows: the whole pasuk goes like this. The Gemara is only quoting one part of it, as it often does. The pasuk goes: a person has a person committed a sin for which he's guilty and executed, and in fact he is executed. Then you should hang him. So, first of all, Yocho Kalamu Mosin Nitlin, you would think from that pasuk it means that everybody who's Chayiv Mrs. Basin gets hanged. No, Talmud Loima, the pasuk continues, the next pasuk continues, Ki Kilolasele Kim Toluri. Because the curse of Hashem is the one who's hanged. Now, we're going to see later on in the Gemara another meaning. We're going to see later on another meaning of that phrase. But the first, most basic meaning of it is we can learn from this. Ma makalo b'skila, just like the actual makalo, the one who actually blasphemes Hashem, gets skila, as we've been learning the last couple of days. Af kol shebeskila, the same way we can learn from that, that the pasuk is implying anybody else who's chayiv of the same punishment as someone who cursed Hashem, namely that he's chayiv skila, then it would mean that he's hanged. Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. So that's where Rabbi Eliezer learns that everybody who gets skila, their body is hanged, because he says the pasuk is saying that anybody, when is a person hanged? When they're like the makalo. V'cham say no, makalo, it's not just any old thing that's chayiv skila. It means he denied the fundamental thing of Yiddishkeit. He cursed Hashem, which shows a complete lack of respect for Hashem. So it can only include this. The pasuk therefore is only including anybody who the same thing denied a fundamental concept of Yiddishkeit, and the only one therefore would be who worships Avodah Zarah, which is also then that he's denying Hashem completely. So therefore, the Chum say that's where we learn from that very same pasuk, because we learn only the blasphemer himself, because that's Kilu Asalikim. And you can add also, you can say also that it includes someone who worships Avodah Zarah, which in that sense is the same kind of thing. In fact, by the way, the Rambam in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, when he brings the halachas of Ovid Avodah Zarah, he brings over there in the middle. He discusses the dinim of Megadif as well, and he says because as we see from this Gemara, there's quite a bit of similarity between them. Okay, so the Gemara says, "B'mai kamifli." What's the underlying machloikas of Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim? So the answer is Rabbanan Darshi Kloli Uprati. The Chacham, Rabbanan Darshi Kloli Uprati. Rabbi Eliezer Dorish Ribuyu Miuti. When it comes to anywhere in the Torah, whenever we have, the Torah will give us a general statement and then a specific statement. Then how do we darshin it? Do we understand it as a klal uprat versus do we understand it as a ribuyu miut? A difference will be a klal uprat. We're going to say it means that. It means the klal would include everything. The prat then limits it only to the one thing stated. Now, in that case, you could say, in that case, why bother mentioning the klal in the first place? So elsewhere, Tosfos explains, and in fact, the Gemara itself says as much in Masechet Nazir, that the reason is, otherwise, we would think, to make a mamotzinu, to derive from it, that it should apply to other similar cases. By putting the klal first and then the prat, the Torah is telling us, don't do that. It means specifically the prat. So the Chachamim in general darshan the Torah using the system of klal uprat. Ribuy miut, on the other hand, is going to be ribuy would include everything. Miut means yes, we have to exclude something, but not necessarily that much. We're going to exclude anything that really is not at all similar to the prat. But anything that isn't at all similar to the prat, then if we say we use the ribuy, not the prat, the miut. If we have anything that is at least similar, that's not completely excluded by the miut, then Rabbi Eliezer would say we would include it. So, in other words, what do we mean? So let's work out how this applies in this case. Rabbanan Darshi Klali Uprati, the Chachamim Darshin, using the system of Klal Uprat. So they say as follows: Vahumas Visalisa Klal. First, when the pasuk says that when he's executed and he's hanged, then that would be a klal, which, as we said before, we would think it means anybody who's chayiv mises based in afterwards gets hanged. But then when the pasuk says ki kilolas, when the pasuk says because it's a curse against Hashem, so that's prat, that's a limitation. It means that only when someone cursed Hashem, then it would be that. Well, so now the Chachamim say I have a makarvi lahadodi. If the klal and the prat were together in the same pasuk, then he would say en b'klal al-mash amrin, and then he would say en b'klal al-mash b'prat. Then it would mean the klal means exclusively what's in the prat. Then we would say the only one who gets hanged is the makalo, because the pasuk says ki kilo asavakim. But hani ein midi achrin aloi. And then it would be, and then it would be only the one who cursed Hashem would be would get hanged, but anybody who was chayav misa for anything else, even an oved avodah zarah, would not. But now, since they're not in the same pasuk, hashta de merachaki mahadodi, but now they're not right next to each other because they're in separate psukim. So therefore, it's not a pure klal prat. Therefore, ahani. So therefore, it helps out now that it's separate from the klal. Then we can add one more thing. So we can add in avodah zarah, which is similar to megadef and everything. Both that involves a direct insult against Hashem, and that they're both chayiv skila. So therefore, the Chum would say. So in effect, what we're doing is. In effect, what we're doing is, the Ran explains that in effect, what we're doing is we're treating this as though it was a klal or prat or klal. Had it been the klal and the prat in the same pasuk, then we would have klal or prat, then we would say it's only one. Now that we have them a little further apart, then we can douch in the klal as if it was a klal or prat or klal. Tosfos actually refers to a different Gemara who says that such a thing is not judged as a klal or prat at all, but that's Tosfos says. That's what it means, basically. We don't judge it as exclusively a klal or prat. It means it's like the Ran is saying, it's a klal or prat or klal now. So therefore, that's how the Chachamim learn it, and therefore they're saying that ultimately all you can include in is the Mekalel, and the thing that is most similar to the Mekalel, namely Oved Avodah Zarah. Rabbi Eliezer Darash Ribuy Yomiyot. Meanwhile, Rabbi Eliezer Darash is using the system of Ribuy Yomiyot, which again means to begin with we would include everything, but afterwards when we're only it's the other way around. They would say they would well they, Rabbi Eliezer is using the Ribuy Yomiyot system, which means basically he says basically everything should be included. The Miyot tells us exclude one thing which is least similar to anything else that to anything that's in the pasuk, or not one thing, but. Reduce, get rid of anything that is not really at all similar to what it says in the pasuk, but anything that's even slightly similar could be included. So therefore, he says v'humas v'salisa ribui. So when it says that when the person is executed, then and when the person is executed, then he's hanged. Then it's a ribui, means everybody. Ki kilas miut. The word kil ki kilas. Is a mute. Now again, I have a makavi la hadodi. Rabbi Eliezer says if they were together in the same pasuk, lo have a marbinan ella avodis kachavim the domi lo b'chol meili. Then he says indeed we would only include avodah zarah which is like it in everything. Hashda de merachaki mahadodi. But now that they're further apart, ahani le rabbi yishai haniskolin. Then Rabbi Eliezer says it can come to include all the other niskolin as well. So in other words, he starts out with a more expansive definition anyway than the Chachamim do, and now he's saying that we're going to expand it. You Chachamim are saying we're expanding it because it's in another pasuk, and you're making it therefore into a klal or prat or klal. He's saying I'm doing similar, and we're expanding it to be almost like a ribui miut ribui. So therefore, we're including much more. We're including many, many more things. And Rashi goes on to point out over here, Rashi discusses over here, that from this Gemara, we can see that in general, when we talk about a klal or prat or klal, that's what it means. When we say, einat iyat adon elaka einat prat, then that's what it means. In other words, we're going to figure out what does the prat have, what characteristics does the prat have, and we're going to include only the things that have those exact characteristics, as opposed to when we say ribui miut ribui, then it means that we're going to only exclude things that are dissimilar to it altogether. And again, if it only was a klal of prat, then it would mean we would have exclusively the prat, and we would not even include anything else, because we have the klal of prat, which are separated over here in different psukim, and therefore we treat them as a klal of prat or klal, then therefore we're able, according to the Chachamim, to include one more thing. And the same thing as far as the ribui miut, according to Rabbi Eliezer, that we're only when you find something that's not at all similar to the prat would be excluded. So that would mean the other three misses based in, which are not at all similar to skila. But other than that, he says everything that involves skila, anytime there's skila, then automatically there would be hanging as well. We have to remember, by the way, that when we say in morning davening from the Braisa of Rabbi Shmuel, B'shloshes Yomidus, Atorah Nedreshes, each of those 13 is really a general principle which includes in it many sub-details. So here we have an example where we read that we just rattle them off. Klal of Prato Klal, Klal of Prato, Prato Klal, Klal of Prato Klal, Yet Dona Kleina Prat. But it means that each one of them has multiple details within it, like we see here in the Gemara. Okay. We said ish tolan chola. We said a man is hanged facing people, facing everybody, and a woman facing in the opposite direction according to Rabbi Eliezer. And the Chacham say that a woman's body is not hanged at all. So my time did Rabbanan. Why do the Chachamim hold that a woman is not hanged? So that because they say Salisa, because the pasuk says you should hang him. So the oisoi, like we learned previously, is a mute. Oisoi veloi oisa. It means him, but not her. So her body doesn't get hanged. Rabbi Eliezer, what does Rabbi Eliezer answer to that? He says, oisoi veloi ksusoi. He says the oisoi is like we had previously by skila. It means without his clothing, the same way as we said, before a person is given skila, he's stripped of his clothing. And we have machlokas Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim, whether that applies to a woman as well or not. But by man, it definitely applies. So therefore, Rabbi Eliezer says, that's what you're learning from this, that the hanging also takes place. The body is not clothed. Now, Tosfos points out the body was already unclothed for the skila. But now you would think that maybe they should redress the body before they hang it. And therefore, we're saying that, no, you don't. The Oysoi teaches us that you don't do that. Which a point that's made of that is, you know, the whole reason we said we discussed in the Gemara on Daf Mem Hey, why indeed do we take off his clothing? We said you do have the word oisai, but we said also it has the benefit of, even though on the one hand it's a bizoyan for him, it has the benefit of making that he'll die quicker. So now when we're talking about he's already dead, you would think there's no point in it. Nevertheless, the pasuk is saying oisai, and then Rabbi Eliezer says from that you learn that it's without his clothing, but that doesn't mean that there's a mute to exclude a woman. So what are the Chachamim answer to that? The fact is you need the word oisoi to teach us that. So the Gemara says, no, Hanami, you're right. They do have to learn, they do have to agree with Rabbi Eliezer that the word oisoi, v'salisa oisoi al eitz, means without his clothing. Ella, they say that, no, where do we get that? Men and women are different because the Pasuk says, because the Pasuk says, v'chiyah be'ish, because the Pasuk says, when there's a man, in the man, a sin for which he's chayit misa. Implying ish v'lo isha, so there it means a man, not a woman, because otherwise there'd be no reason to say the word ish when it comes to missus based in. It applies equally to both men and women, as we learned before. So why would it have to specify ish over here? Say the chachamim, if not to exclude a woman. V'Rabbi Eliezer, what does Rabbi Eliezer answer to that? He says, "Hi v'chiyah be'ish my dorish be." So what is he dashing with this word ish? The answer is Amar Shlokish Ahulam Uti Ben Sora Ramoda. He Rebbe Eliezer would say that it comes to exclude a Ben Sora Ramoda. Now we're going to talk about the Ben Sora Ramoda in great detail later on in Amasechta. The whole eighth parak of Amasechta is named for him. It's called Ben Sora Parak Ben Sora Ramoda, and most of it deals with the dinim of him. And we're going to say that the Ben Sora Ramoda is only, he has to be young enough to still be considered a Ben. Not when he's old enough to be an ish, which is where we learn that the whole concept of a ben, the whole time frame in which he can be a ben sora ramoda is only during the 3 months after he turns 13. So therefore, Rabbi Eliezer is saying that you learn from that, you learn from this word ish, that he's not that his body is not hanged. So therefore, but not to exclude women. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? V'hatanya ben sora ramoda nisko v'nitla divrei Rabbi Eliezer. What do you mean? A braisa clearly says that Rabbi Eliezer says a ben sora ramoda is given skila and is hanged. So you can't say that it means that Rabbi Eliezer would say that he's not, because the braisa clearly says Rabbi Eliezer says he is. Ella, Amar of Nachman Yitzchok, on the contrary, the rabbis ben sora ramoda. On the contrary, the word ish in the pasuk according to Rabbi Eliezer is coming to add that a ben sora ramoda would be getting skill, would be hanged as well. My time. Oh, now why we need to add him? Why do we need to add him? If anyway, Rabbi Eliezer had said that everybody who gets skila is hanged, and the ben sora ramoda is getting skila. Well, the Gemara explains. My time. How are we learning him? The pasuk says if there's a sin in a man, implying ish v'lay ben. So first it would mean a man, but not a boy. But when it says chet, when it says a sin, means it's another miut. Mishal chetei nerag, only where he's being executed because of the actual avera he did. Yotze ben sora ramoda shal shum soifei nerag, as opposed to the ben sora ramoda. Now the ben sora ramoda has obviously acted badly, as we're going to learn later in the Masechta in detail. He stole money from his parents. He bought wine and he bought meat and wine and ate it in a very gluttonous way. Nonetheless, those are not actions that would normally make him chayav misa. Stealing, a person is not chayav misa for being a glutton and a drunkard. What is it, as we're going to learn later on, the Torah, Rashi brings on the Psukim, that the Torah is looking ahead proactively. If he starts doing like this, and he continues with this kind of lifestyle, eventually he's going to Eventually, he's going to become a bandit and go and kill and rob and kill people. So the Torah says, better let's head off the problem proactively rather than waiting until he becomes an adult and is going to actually do that. We should execute him now before he reached that stage. But the point is that so it's more of a preventative measure. It's not because of the actual chet that he did. So therefore, so having miut acha miut. So in effect, what you have over here then is a miut after a miut. You have one miut from the word ish, which excludes a ben, and another one from the word chet. So therefore, miut acha miut, ve'en miut acha miut, elo l'rabbis, and a miut acha miut, on the contrary, comes to include rather than exclude, and that is how Rabbi Yezir was saying that we include the ben soter remota after all. So the question is, again, Rabbi Eliezer holds, anyway, everybody who gets skilla is being hanged. Why would we even need a ribui in the first place? Don't have the word ish, don't have the word chet, and you don't need. And automatically, Rabbi Eliezer would say, everybody who gets skilla automatically gets hanged. That's the Tosfos Yom Tov asks that question. The Rashash answers that, okay, listen, you could say, again, first of all, anybody else who's chayiv skilla, out of the 18 types of averas for which a person is chayiv skilla, 17 of them at least did an actual avera that in and of itself is chayiv skilla. Only the ben soter remota was saying is not, as a preventative measure. And also, anybody else who's chayiv skilla, it could be any time during their lifetime. Once they become chayiv misa, once they become of the age to be chayiv misa's based in, it's going to continue for their entire lives. Once a person is old enough, for example, to be executed by based in for being machal Shabbos, there's no deadline. There's no oldest age at which they could give him skilla. The same way for arayas, the same way for avodah zarah, etc. The ben soter remota, on the other hand, we're saying only has a 3-month window. So you would think between those two things, that plus the fact that it's not in and of itself an aveda that would make him chayiv misa, you would think maybe it would be an exception, and therefore Rabbi Eliezer says, we need the two miyotim, one after the other, from the word ish and from the word chet, to tell us that nevertheless his body is hanged. So meanwhile, the Chachamim say you don't need any of that because according to them, anyway, of course, a ben soter remota is not getting hanged because anyway, they say only a megadef and a oda vadazora are hanged, and the ben soter remota is neither one. So they use the word ish to learn ish and not isha. And as far as the chet, the Gemara doesn't say what the Gemara doesn't say what they're learning from the word chet. Next, we said in the Mishnah, Omer lehen Rabbi Eliezer. So Rabbi Eliezer says, I'll prove to you that a woman's body is hanged, and that's for other averus other than Megadef and Ovid of Azara, because he says, Valo Shimon and Shatach Tolon Noshim Chola, that Shimon and Shatach hanged women in Ashkelon for witchcraft, and that was women, and that was a different avera. And the Chum answered, you know what, anyway, you don't judge two people on one day, and therefore that was obviously a Haras Shah. So the Gemara points out, Omer of Chista, Lo Shonu Ela B'Shtei Misses. Now, when do we say that you can't judge two people on that one based in can't judge two people on the same day? Is where we're talking about two different missus. So one person is being brought up on charges that would involve skilla, and another one sreifa. So then based in has to be able to give their full attention to each one individually. And as we've been learning throughout the Masechta, we have to have hitzilua eda. They have to be able to put in as much effort as possible to be able to exonerate him. And therefore, we don't just want them. We don't just want. We don't want express lane justice. We want each one to be given their due time. Avo b'misa achas donin, but Rabbi Chista says if it's both the same misa based in, then you could judge them both on the same day. But the Gemara asks, wait a minute, v'almaisa de Shimon ben Shatach, the misa achas avoi. What do you mean? The story of Shimon ben Shatach, it all involved the same misa. The women are all getting skilla. And the Chum saying that no, that's an exception to the rule because normally you can't judge two people on one day. Now, you're right. Eli itmar, hochi itmar. Rather, if it was said, this statement of Rav Chista, it was said as follows, hochi itmar. Loi shonu elo b'misa achas ke'ein shtei misas. When do we say that you can't judge two people on one day? Yes, even if it is the same misa, but it's like two misas, meaning it's two different averas. V'heichi dami k'gan shtei averas, meaning where it was two different averas. So one person is being brought on avodah zarah and another one on Shabbos. So even though both of them are going to be chayiv skilla, if it turns out to be true, nevertheless, they are different averus, and based in therefore has to give each one their individual attention. But Rav Chista says, when it's all one misa and one avera, namely, for example, Rashi says both of them is chilul Shabbos, so both of them is naira ma'arasa, so therefore, so done in, then we could judge even a bunch of them on the same day. So now in the case of the women, though, not all of them did the same kind of kishuf, because again, there's oy versus yidoni, and Tosfos points out there were even more kinds of kishuf. So normally Shimon and Shatach would not have been able to judge them all and punish and have them all executed on one day. But here was an exception because he realized that it was necessary as an emergency situation. The Meiri does bring a different explanation, actually. The Meiri first explains, like Rashi says over here, that we just said, that if it was two people, even though they did separate Averis, as long as it was the same type of Avera, for example, both of them Chilul Shabbos, then Beis Din can judge and punish them both on one day, the Meiri brings a different opinion, a Yesh Meforshim, that no, for example, where it's the same action of Avera, the two of them did the Avera together, for example, two people were Mezana together, or Edim Zomim, then we could say they could judge and punish them both on one day, but if each one did the Avera separately, then the Meiri brings Yesh Omim that they still wouldn't be able to punish them both on the same day. But in any case, here with the 80 women, there were different ones who did different things, and nevertheless, he had them all executed on one day. So that must have been an exceptional situation. Okay, the Gemara says must have Rav Ada Ba'ava, but Rav Ada Ba'ava says in that case, I have a contradiction from a Braisa. Ain donin shnayim b'yem echad v'afilu b'noyef v'neyefes. You cannot judge, you cannot condemn two people to be executed on one day, even if it's a noyef and a neyefes, a man and a woman where she's an ashes ish and a man is mezana with her. And we see clearly that's obviously one avera, and it's obviously one avera. It's one Isser, it's the same action of Avera, and it's both the same Chiyuv Nisa, and yet the Braisa is saying you can't execute them on the same day. The answer is Tirgum Rav Chista Bas Koyin Boila. The answer is Rav Chista says that Braisa is talking about specifically where it's a Bas Koyin who was Mizana, and then her Boil. Now we're going to learn in the next Perek, the Torah tells us in Parshas Emor that a Bas Koyin in Mizana, the Pasuk says, Bo'ish Tisore, if she gets Srefa, we're going to learn in the next Perek the details. We're going to have a long discussion between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim about what are the exact circumstances under which she gets Srefa. But in any case, there definitely is a case of a Bas Koyin who gets Srefa, where the kind of thing, where in other words, when you think about it, an Eishes Ish, there are three possible misses that an Eishes Ish can get for being Mizana. In the normal case, it would be chenek, when there's nothing else special. When she's a Naira Maurasa, it would be Skila. And when she's a Bas Koyin, it's Srefa. We'll see in the next Perek on Daphne Aleph, we'll have a long discussion about when exactly Srefa applies. But in any case, the point is, the boil is always going to be getting skila or chenek, as the case may be. So now you have, even though it was the same exact, it was obviously the same action of Avera, because the two of them were Mizana together, and it is the same Isser, nevertheless, though, the Misa is going to be different, because she's going to be getting Srefa, and he's going to be getting something else. That is the case where Rav Ada's Braisa is saying that you can't punish them both on the same day, because they are different Misas. But had it been a regular case where both of them are getting skiller or both of them are getting chenek, then you would be able to punish them both on the same day. Oy, or Rav Chista says, here's another example where there are different misses involved, even though it's the same Avera. Bebas koyen vizoymeme zoymemeha. Suppose you have, involving a bas koyen, but you can be talking about the zoymemim of the edim zoymemim of the edim zoymemim. Meaning, in other words, like this. So if we have two Edim come to Beis Din and say that this Bas Koyin was Mizana. Now, if that turns out to be true, of course, then she's getting Srefa. Now, other Edim come and say, Imonu Hayisem, and they say that the first set of Edim are Edim Zomim. Now, what Misa are they getting? They're not getting Srefa. They're getting Chenek. They're getting chenek because the Gemara learns out later on in the next perek that we learn from a pasuk that where there's a difference between the missa of the man and of the woman, they're getting the missa that would have gone to the man. And since the man is not getting srefa, because the whole concept of srefa applies only to the bas koyin herself, then therefore the edim are getting whatever punishment the boil would have gotten. So now, again, you have Reuven and Shimon come to Beis Din and say that this Bas Koyin was Mizana. So if true, she's Chayiv Srefa. Now Levi and Yehuda come and say, Imonu Hayisim, you were with us at that time, making you Edim Zemmin. Reuven and Shimon are now subject to Chenek. Now what happens is you have Zomame zoom in. Now you have Yisachar and Zvulun come to Beis Din and say to Levi and Yehuda, Imanu HaYisem, you were with us when at the time when you claim that Reuven and Shimon were with you in California. So here, Reuven and Shimon are saying that they were Mezano in New York. Levi and Yehuda come and say, wait, on that day you were with us in California. Then Yisachar and Zvulun come and say, "You yourselves, Levi and Yehuda, you were in Texas on that day. You weren't in New York or Colorado. It doesn't really matter. Whatever. The point is, you weren't in California when you said that Reuven and Shimon were with you." Well, what happens now? Now we reinstate the Mrs. Beis Din for the Bas Koyen because now the original edus that they said that she was Mezana in New York on such and such a date still stands. The original Edim who came with the charges against her are also free from Missa, of course, because it turns out that their Edus is true. But meanwhile, the middle set of Edim, Levi and Yehuda, are the ones who are going to be Chayiv Missa. But now what happens is that so again, there's different Missas. The Bas Koyen herself is getting Sreifa, but the middle set of Edim, the ones who turned out were Zomim, after all, they're getting Chenek. So therefore, again, that would be an example where even though it's the same Aveda, the same judicial procedure involved, nevertheless, there's different missus, and therefore Rav Chisda says that is what Rav Adar Ba'Av's Braisa means, that in that case they have to be judged on separate, they have to be judged by Beis Din and punished by Beis Din on separate days, because even though it's the same Aveda, the same procedure, nevertheless, the fact is there are different missus involved. Now, an interesting thing in this, Tosfos points out. Now, the Gemara discusses this point in more detail. We'll learn at the beginning of Masechta Makos, Bez Hashem. But the Gemara points out. Now, you could have a case. Now, normally, of course, if they're coming with edus against the woman, against the Bas Koyen, normally there's edus involving the boil as well. After all, you know, they'd be saying that this woman who they're naming was Mezana with this boil, and they're naming him. But you can have a case, Tosfos points out, you can have, let's say, for example, the boil was a cotton. He's not going to be Chayiv Misa. If he's over 9 years old, his bia is a bia, and then it has effect in halacha, and therefore she becomes, therefore she's considered an AFS and she's Chayiv Misa. He wouldn't be because he's underage. Nevertheless, we wouldn't say that she gets Sreifa. Nevertheless, we wouldn't say that the Edim, get Sreifa. They would still get Chenek. The Gemara learns it from a pasuk that says that where there's a difference between the missa that they're trying to get for him versus for her, then they get his missa. So that would imply if they're not trying to get a missa at all, because for example he's underage, then maybe they should have their missa. They should have her missa. Tosfos says that no, that's actually why we need the Tosfos says. In fact, that's why we need two different psukim. The Gemara is going to point out that the Gemara later on when we learn this point about the different missas and the Edim Zomim. We're going to talk about there are two different psukim from where we learn that concept. So one of them applies where in fact they're saying edus about both of them, and the other one is where they're only saying edus about her, and nevertheless the same rule applies. So that's according to Tosfos. The Ritva explains that actually Rashi disagrees with that. Rashi would draw a distinction between whether in fact they're giving edus to try and be mechayev the boil missa as well, versus where they're not because he's underage or because he ran away or whatever. Anyway, so again, the point is that Rav Chisda is pointing out. So you have here's examples where even though it's all the same process, nevertheless there are different missus involved. That would be where Beis Din has to judge and punish them separately. But if it was in fact the same Avera, let's say both of them were Mechalal Shabbos, and therefore both of them are Chayiv Skila, then Beis Din could deal with both cases on the one day. Or again, according to one opinion, or according to one explanation in the Meiri, it would have to be actually that the two of them did the Avera together. For example, the Noyef and Nefes or the Edim Zemim or whatever. So the Gemara brings, since we mentioned that Shimon and Shatach did this unusual thing to punish all the 80 women on one day, even though normally you don't do that. So the Gemara brings Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, Shamaiti. I've heard from my Rebbeim, Shabeis in Makin va'Oinshin Shaloi min HaTorah, that Beis Din are allowed to beat with Malkus or to punish with Missa, even where it doesn't say so in the Torah. V'loi laver al divrei Torah, not where they're doing it in order to violate the Torah. They can't just make up new halachas themselves. Ella. Only when they're doing it in order to make a fence for the Torah. As we know, that's the job of the Chacham, Asu Siog LaTorah. So where they're doing it in order to fence around the Torah when they're seeing that people are being careless with a mitzvah, then they're entitled to impose malchus and missa and even missa where necessary in order to deal with that. So the Ran makes a point, for example, that it means they can never do it permanently. They can do it as a one-off, but they can never do as a permanent thing that that from now on this thing, which until now was not chayav misa, is going to be chayav misa or something that they don't have the ability to do. So there are the Ran goes on to say that only a Beis Din that has smicha, the original smicha ish mipi ish, can do that. But that's not so simple because we don't have that kind of smicha nowadays. However, the Ran goes on to point out that first of all, there can be a case where the government gives Jewish courts, gives Jewish Bote Dinim the right to judge capital cases and to execute people. So then, if both halacha and lahavdil secular law would say the person is chayiv misa, then the person then in fact Beis Din is entitled to do that. So in fact there's an interesting tshuva from the Rosh about just that. The Rosh lived the first half of his life in Germany. He was the top Talmud of Maharam Rutenberg. Then he and his family were forced to escape Germany because the government was threatening to arrest the Rosh and try to hold him for ransom like they had done with Maharam Rutenberg. So he and his family managed to escape to Spain. And he was appointed the Rav of Toledo over there, and people were sending him shilas from all over Spain. So at one point, the Rosh has in one of his truvas where they asked him a question from one of the Bote Dinim, I think in Barcelona or something, about a situation of a Yid who had blasphemed Hashem, and the Goyim at that time also considered that something which is Chayiv Misa. And the question is, should they do that? What should we do with the guy? And the Rosh says, I can't believe it in the first place that you're even asking about Dinei Nefoshes. We don't have Dinei Nefoshes ever since the times of the Sanhedrin. So now, based on what the Ran is saying, the Bote Dinim in Spain, so then the Rosh goes on to explain, similar to what the Ran is saying, that yeah, I was told that the Bote Dinim here in Spain are told by the government that they're given jurisdiction over such cases. So the Rosh himself says, I still don't agree with that concept that you should be able to give Missus Beis Din just because of that. But nevertheless, I understand the government is putting it in your hands to keep to keep order and to keep the peace. So fine, the Rosh says in this case, for example, cut out the guy's tongue instead, rather than actually executing him. But the Ran is saying that no, apparently, if the government actually gives them that kind of jurisdiction, then they could even do dini nefashis. In any case, that's one. And the other case is a case of a moiser. Where there are cases in various times in Jewish history where Mosrim have been put to death even without a Beis Din Smuchim. The Rimigash tells a the Rimigash tells a story in one of his Truvas involving that, where one time it was it was Yom Kippur and it was Shabbos and it was Ne'ilah, and they took this Moser and they took this Moser and killed him. The Margolos Hayam tells a similar story that happened in his father's time, where this Moser comes to town to Kol Nidre on Yom Kippur night, and they took him to the river and drowned him. So you have cases like that. You're allowed to, even where there's no Beis Din Smuchim. But other than that, and on top of that, also Bechlal, this that the Ran is saying, you need a Beis Din Smuchim. Not everybody agrees with that either. The Rashba explains that no, you don't even need a Beis Din Smuchim, even if they don't have, even if the government hasn't officially given them jurisdiction. Nevertheless, the Rashba says they would have the ability on a one-off basis. Anyway, so the Gemara gives some examples. So it happened, for example, that there was a person who was riding on a horse in on Shabbos in the times of the Greeks, in the times when the Greeks ruled over Eretz Yisrael. Now, this is something which was only also Dirabbanan, so there's no Missus Beis Din involved ordinarily for Dinim Dirabbanan, but it was a time when people were getting careless with the mitzvahs of Shabbos. Rashi points out because the Yevonim were in charge and they were making gzeiros, so people were starting to think that mitzvahs maybe don't mean very much. So therefore, so Beis Din took an emergency measure. They viewed a Beis Din v'sakluhu, so Beis Din, they brought him to Beis Din and had and gave him skila. Not because he really deserved skila under normal circumstances. It was only an issur d'rabbanan that he was over. Ella shashot but because the time demanded it, because people were getting careless with such averus. Similarly, there was a case with a certain person. He had relations with his wife under a fig tree, which is a pretty sticky thing to do. But again, it's not something that would be high of normally any particular punishment. They brought him to Beis Din and they gave him Malkus. Again, not because he actually deserves to have to be given Malkus for such a thing, but the time demanded it because it was a case where again people were getting careless with these kinds of things, and therefore Beis Din decided as an emergency measure, as a one-off thing, they had to give this level of punishment. There is actually, in this connection, there's an interesting thing where at one point in the early 1980s, the governor of New York at that time wrote a letter to Moshe Feinstein. They were discussing the whole matter of capital punishment in New York State, and the governor at the time wrote a letter to Moshe asking what is your Torah have to say about this? Here we're all discussing about capital punishment. Is it moral? Is it ethical? What does your Torah have to say about it? And Ramosha wrote a long tshuva explaining actually what the Torah holds about it, that for one thing, that the capital punishment is meant to be a deterrent. It's meant to be something that will deter people from doing this kind of thing. But the fact is that we have this very careful safeguards in our Torah, as we've been learning throughout the whole Masechta over here, to make sure that it doesn't happen just willy-nilly. All told, basically, Reb Moshe goes on to say that you know what when you have when people are when people are thinking. When people are thinking that they can just get away with it, you know, any time they get angry, they can just go and they can just go. They think that the murder is meaningless over there. So then, yes, as we see from our Gemara over here, then yes, in emergency situations, you can do that, even when it doesn't follow all the rules of evidence. So basically, in other words, Reb Moshe is saying there is definitely room in Torah for capital punishment according to American law. Well, Lamaisa, in the end, they still haven't done that. Ada Yemazeh, but anyway. Okay. The Mishnah continues. Ketzad tolan oisei. How do we actually hang the person? So we said we talked about whose body gets hanged and who not. So now let's talk about the actual procedure. Meshaken es hakoda ba'aretz. We start by sticking a pole into the ground. Va'etz yotze, and there's another piece of wood sticking out of it like a peg. So it looks sort of like, I guess it kind of looks like the like when we play a game of hangman, for example, and you draw the gallows over there. So it looks kind of like that. You take the person's body, you bring the two hands together, one on top of the other, and you hang him by his hands. So in other words, you put the two hands together. You tie them together with a rope, and then you hang it by that rope from this makeshift gallows. Rabbi Yossi says you do it differently. Hakoda muta ala kos. So Rabbi Yossi says you don't stick the end of the pole into the ground, as we'll see in the Gemara on Omid Beis, why Rabbi Yossi doesn't like the idea of it being stuck into the ground. So rather, Rabbi Yossi says you lean the end of the pole against the wall, the toila oisin kedeach shatabochin oisin, and now you hang the body from that diagonal pole. You hang it the way butchers hang up a carcass of an animal to be skinned. What's the point of that comparison to Feres Yisrael? And the Mishnayos explains like this. Rabbi Yossi said, Rabbi Yossi wants us to know, listen, according to the Chachamim, you're hanging the person, so whichever direction the horizontal beam is sticking out, that's the direction where the body will be hanging from. Rabbi Yossi says, listen, if you're going to do it the way I'm doing, the way I'm saying, where the pole is going to be diagonally leaning against the wall, you necessarily can't have then the body is going to be hanging on the outside of the pole, because then it's not going to be hanging, it's just going to be lying there on the, it's just going to be hang, lying on the diagonal, on the outside diagonal of the pole. Therefore, he says you have to hang it near where the pole meets the wall. In other words, on the side of the pole, basically. So that way, the body is actually hanging, and that would be similar to the way that butchers hang up a carcass of an animal, so that they can get to both sides of it. So that's the point. That's the point of Rabbi Yossi's comparison. Okay. The Mishnah continues, Umatirin oise miyad. Now they would untie the body from the gallows right after they put it up, as we're going to learn in the Gemara. The imlon, and if they left it on the gallows all night, over all the beloisese, then they're over on a loisese for doing so. Shenema, as the pasuk says, loisolin nivlose ala eitz. You cannot leave his body hanging overnight on the pole. Ki kover tikberenu bayemahu. Rather, you must bury him on that one day, on that same day. Ki killa selekim, because it's a curse to Hashem for the person to be hanged. Kaloimar. Now, what does that mean? What does that pasuk mean? Mipnei mazat toloi. People are going to ask, why was this person's body hanged? And they're going to answer, "Birchas Hashem, because he blasphemed Hashem." V'nimtz Hashem shemayim eschalo. So then it causes a greater chilul Hashem, that the fact that people are mentioning over and over the fact that he cursed and blasphemed Hashem. Now that's according to the Chachamim, who, as we learned in the previous Mishnah, said that only a Megadeth and a Oved Avodah Zarah gets hanged. According to Rabbi Eliezer, who said that at any time a person gets skila, then we're going to learn on Amud Beis a different reason for a different meaning behind this pasuk, ki killa selekim toloi. There is discussion about this, by the way. The Rambam learns that they would be over on the loises. Only there's two things. In the Torah, you have an esse, ki kover tikberenu bayemahu, bury him on that day, and a loises, lois solid nivlos al eighth, don't let the body stay there overnight. The Rambam holds if they allow it to stay any time after the day is over, meaning even a minute into the night, then they're over on the esse. But the loises, they're only over on if they leave him on all night. And then different Rishonim disagree with that and say that maybe even the Esser would only be after the whole night passes. And then the Yad Rama says the other way around, that he'd be over on the Lois Esser right away by Shkia. So in any case, as we're going to learn in the Gemara, what they would do is they would hang the body shortly before Shkia and then take it down immediately. That way they don't forget it over there, and that way they're not over at all. The Mishnah continues. Amar Rav Meir. Rav Meir says, "Here's another meaning of that pasuk, ki killa selekim toloi." So here we're saying the meaning of it is that it means you can't let the body stay there, because then the more it's hanging over there, people are going to say that he's hanging because he blasphemed Hashem, and it's going to create a greater chilul Hashem, a greater degradation of Hashem's name. But now Rav Meir says, I'll give you another meaning of the pasuk. B'shar sha'odem mitzar, when a yid is suffering for his aveir, for being punished for his averus, shchina ma loshen emeres, what loshen does the shchina say? The shchina that Hashem, so to speak, mourns for him. Kalani meiroshi, kalani mizroi. Kalani from my head, kalani from my arm. We're going to see in the Gemara what that means, but the first most basic explanation is kalani means, Rashi brings from the Gemara on Amud Beis, like a person says, my head and my arm feel heavy. We're going to see in the Gemara how kalani means that exactly, but the most basic meaning is like a person says when he's feeling distressed, my head feels heavy and my arm feels heavy, and Hashem, so to speak, says that when the Rosha is punished. So Marsha points out, after all, we have the head and the arm are the two places where Hashem, where a person places his tefillin. And we know, so to speak, Hashem wears tefillin as well. And his tefillin talk about the greatness of the Jewish people. So now Hashem is saying, so to speak, that he feels pain in those areas where where his tefillin goes, so to speak, even when the Rosha is punished. And so Rav Meir continues, if you see that Hashem is so pained even when Rishoyim's blood is spilled, you can imagine how much more so that Hashem is pained, so to speak, when Tzaddikim's blood is spilled. The Mishnah continues. Now, when we said that the body can't be left overnight, this concept that you're not allowed to leave a body overnight is not only when a person was executed by Beis Din. Anytime a person leaves over his relative unburied, then he's over on a loisese. If it was unnecessary, but if you left the body unburied for the covered of the mess, for example, it was going to take time to get an oren or to get tachrichim for the mess. Then over all of, then he's not over on it, because then it's for the covered. Then it's for the covered of the mess. So the Mishnah continues. As far as the person who was given skila, and now hanged, and they have to take the body down right away. So the Mishnah continues. After the body is taken down, they don't right away go and bury him with his ancestors in their Beis HaKvaris, because as we're going to learn in the Gemara, we'll learn tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, you don't bury a Rosha near a Tzaddik. So even though he's already had Mrs. Bastin, nevertheless, as the Gemara is going to say, his Aveira, his Kapora is not complete yet, and therefore at this point, relative to his ancestors, he's still considered a Rosha. Rather, Beistin would have two cemeteries prepared for the purpose. One was for people who were chayiv chenek or chayiv hereg or chenek, which are the two lesser misses based in. The other one is for people who got skila or sreifa, which are the harsher punishments that based in does. So they would have one base akvaras for each one. We're going to learn in the Gemara tomorrow why they would have two. In that case, why don't they have a separate base akvaras for each type of missa? We'll see that in the Gemara tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. The Mishnah continues, Nis'akol abasar, once the flesh has decayed in the grave, and all that's left is bones, then at that point the kapara is complete. Now they could gather up the bones, and they could bury them in the expected place together with his ancestors. Bechlal, the minhag was in those days, we find all over Shas, that there was a common minhag that a person would be buried only temporarily in a grave until the flesh decayed, and then when it was just bones, then they would gather up the bones and bring them to burial with their ancestors. Many times also they would put the bones in a stone box, an ossuary, it's called in English. They found ossuaries like that all over Eretz Yisrael. But here we're saying that even so, the normal way would be, in other words, that they would be buried together with their relatives in a Beis HaKvaras, and then later on the bones would be taken and then placed into one of these ossuaries or otherwise placed someplace else in the Beis HaKvaras. Here we're saying, to begin with, when the person was executed, he wouldn't even be buried with his ancestors, with his family, but rather in one of these two Batei Kvaras that are meant for the executed criminals, and only later on would the bones be moved. The Mishnah continues, after the person was executed, the relatives of the person would come and greet and then ask about the welfare of the Dayanim and of the Edim. And they were doing that as if to say, meaning they're not saying this explicitly, but by doing that, they're demonstrating that they're saying, She'en b'li beinu aleichem, we don't hold it against you. They recognize that you judged a true judgment. Your edus was a valid edus. Your judgment to Beis Din was a valid din. And they would not do avelus for him. They would not sit shiva for him, because this way the bizoyan is all part of the kapara. However, they would have the dinim. They would do aninus. They would mourn for him in their heart. Because aninus is only in the heart, so that has nothing to do with covered ames. So in other words, we want to deny him this covered in order, again, all this is part of his kapara, as the Gemara is going to explain, but Aninus is not part of his kapara, so therefore they could do that. The Yad Rama points out another way of looking at it is, they wouldn't do avelus because, as we learned previously on Daf Lamed Tes, ba'avoid Rishoyim Rina, when Rishoyim are destroyed, there is joy. So avelus is inappropriate, but Aninus is something only in their mind, only in their heart, and you can't really outlaw them from feeling a certain way, and therefore that they can do. And in addition, it means that the aninus would have implications in halacha. An oinin is also a koyin, who is an oinin, is also to do the avoida, is also to eat kodshim. So all of that would apply to them doing that on that first day. All right, so the Gemara says, let's work out the details of what we said in the Mishnah of how the hanging takes place. Tanan Rabbanan, Ilu nema chet v'talisa. If the pasuk had only said, if a person has a chet, and it said v'talisa, you should hang him, ho'yisi'omer, then you would think, you know what that means. The hanging is the actual means of execution. Tolan oise chai v'achakach m'misin oise. It means you hang him, tolan oise v'achakach m'misin oise. It means you would first hang him, and then kill him, like the way the Goyish government, like the way the Roman government does. It could mean hanging, it could mean crucifixion, whatever the point is, that you would think that it means that maybe when the hanging takes place while he's alive. So there's a couple of different explanations among the Mefoshim. What does that mean? It doesn't necessarily mean, so the Yad Rama says, for example, it might conceivably mean you hang him up, and while he's hanging, before he dies, then you pelt him with stones, and maybe you makayim the mitzvah of skila that way. And then the Chamer of Chaya points out a couple of other possibilities that you might have thought. The point is, in other words, that you would think that the hanging is the first stage of the process, like you see the way the Goyish governments do. Talmud Loimar, no, the Pasuk says Vehumas v'salisa. First the Pasuk says you execute him, then it says you hang him. So that means, in other words, by the time he's hanged, he's already dead. Ha'ketzad, so what does that mean? So like we said before, So in other words, so the hanging is going to take place after, is going to take place after the fact. So the Tardas Chaim makes a point over here. He says, "What's the Gemara asking? How Kate said? What do you mean how? How is it? What is it? What's the question? How have to do with what we just with what we just established?" So the answer is, he says like this: if you said that it was like the Goyish style, where you hang him and kill him that way, then that means, in other words, that then sure, as soon as he's dead, you take him down and bury him. But now that we say you have a mitzvah to kill him with skillah, and afterwards comes the hanging, maybe you should keep him hanging for longer, and that way you're mekayim the mitzvah more behider. But on the other hand, you have the fact is that the fact is you're going to be over on Lois Sullen if you leave him overnight. So maybe therefore maybe so so therefore so how do we do it? How do we do all that? We want to do the mitzvah in the proper way, but on the other hand, we don't want to end up forgetting him on the gallows and being over. So that's the whole ketzah. That explains the question of the Gemara. Well, given that, then how do we do this? The Or Haner explains in a somewhat similar vein. He says the point of the question is, now that we've established that you need to first kill him and then hang him, then maybe then how do we then isn't there the problem that we might forget him on the tree, that we might forget him hanging over there, and then we're going to be over? So how do we avoid that issue? We wait, we delay the judgment, we delay the verdict until close to Shkia Sachama. Then Beis Din gives the verdict fairly close to Shkia. So that if so 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 in other words, the point is we don't want to finish the verdict in the morning, and he's only going to be executed and hanged later in the day, because then it's going to be then you have a problem of Inuya Din, then we're delaying the din unnecessarily. So we give the verdict close to Shkia Sachama, so then we give him skila, so then we hang his body on the tree, on the pole, echad kosher, echad matu. One person ties the rope over there, as we learned on Amud Aleph, and then another person immediately unties him. That way we've been mekayim the mitzvah of hanging him, and that way we're not going to forget him and leave the body there overnight or into after Shkia and be over on it. So that's the procedure. We said in the Mishnah that we had the machlokas of Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim, what we do, how we do the hanging, where again the Chachamim had said you set up basically a gallows with one end of the pole stuck into the ground, and then you hang him from that. And Rabbi Yossi had said that you just have a pole leaning against the wall. So where do we learn all this from? Tana Rabbanan, eitz. Now the pasuk says that you hang him on an eitz. Now you have to realize that in Lashon Kodesh of Tanakh, the word eitz has a double meaning. It can mean a tree, but it can also mean wood. In Lashon Chachamim, you already have a distinction. In Lashon Chachamim, eitz means just wood, and the word for a tree is ilan. But here, but he, so but so here, when the Torah says eitz, then it could mean either one. So you would think that means that it would work whether the tree is attached to the ground, or whether it's detached or attached. Talmud Lomar, no, the pasuk continues, ki kover, that you should bury him. So that means we have to bury the tree as well, as we learned before. All the things that are used for the Mishnah Beis Din and everything before and after it is all buried together with him. So we have to bury the tree as well. That implies Misha in a mechuster ala kvoda. That means the pole, the thing that he's hanged on, has to be something which the only thing that's lacking after you take him down from it is to go and bury it. Yotzeze, as opposed to when it's a growing tree, shemechuster kvoda. First you'd have to chop it down, then you'd bury it. So therefore, we learn from the pasuk that you can't use it for hanging him. So now the Chachamim say, therefore, the fesa, therefore, so you stick one end of it into the ground. You don't have to chop it down. All you have to do is pull the end out of the ground. Rabbi Yossi says, I learned this similarly from the pasuk, but I go further. Misha ena mechosa al kvura. Again, it means that it's only lacking to be buried. Yotzezesh mechosa tlisho kvura. As opposed to, fine, it doesn't have to be chopped down, but it's supposed to be pulled out of the ground. And Rabbi Yossi says, that's also, it means it's mechosa maisa, and therefore it can't be. That is why Rabbi Yossi is saying in the Mishnah, you can't have one end of it stuck into the ground. It has to be that it's just standing on the ground and leaning against a wall, and therefore that's why he says that you do it that way. Vrabbanan, they say that just pulling it out of the ground is not considered anything significant. Tosfos points out, it's one thing when you're talking about dirt from the Irani Dachas, we're going to get to in the last parak, that where you have to remove dirt from the ground, it can be considered that's considered that that it's not subject to the rules of Irani Dachas. But fine, dirt is more firmly attached to the ground than a piece of wood that's just stuck into the ground. So therefore, the Chum was saying just to pull it out of the hole that you stuck it into in the ground is not going to be, is not strong, is not a reason enough to be considered that that's mechusa maisa. Okay, we said in the Mishnah, we said that the when the pasuk says kikil asalakim toloi means that people are going to say, why is this guy hanging? Because he cursed Hashem, and that's going to be a bizoyan for Hashem's name, and that's why we can't leave him hanging there for too long. So the Gemara says, Tanya, Omer Rav Meir, we learn in a Braisa that Rav Meir gave a different explanation of it. The Chacham gave a Moshel. What can we compare this to? L'shnei achim ta'oimim bi'irachas. You have two twin brothers living in one city. Echad minuhu melech, one of them was appointed king, ve'echad yotzla listios, and the other one became a robber. Siva melech otlo'u, so they caught the robber, and then the king ordered for him to be hanged. Kola roya oise, but anybody who sees him hanging, oimah hamelach toli, they think it's the king hanging there because they look alike. Siva hamelach v'hodeduhu, so the king gave orders for them to take him off the gallows. So the same way, in other words, a person is created in the image of Hashem, b'tzelem elokim, also as Adam. So therefore, a person's body hanging over there is a gnai to Hashem. That's why you can't leave there. That's why you can't leave the body hanging there any longer than necessary. Now, Maushal points out like this. Here in the Gemara, we're saying that the point is because a person is created in Tzelem Elokim. On the Pasuk, Rashi actually explains differently. Rashi explains that the Jewish people are Hashem's children. So according to that, it would mean that this din would apply only to Jews. A goyish body you could leave hanging because there you don't have such an issue. And fine, you could say, in other words, in the sense, we as, the, after all, we're that as we as as it says in Baba Basra, Odom HaRishon out of all of humanity is the one who is most B'Tselem HaLikim. Yaakov is the closest analog to Odom. So therefore, so you could say that only the descendants of Yaakov, only us Jewish people, are purely B'Tselem HaLikim, and therefore this didn't would apply. On the other hand, the Ramban on the Pasuk over there in Parashas Ki Tsetse points out, he says, what are you talking about? We find in Sefer Yoshua, where it describes over there, Yoshua fought a war against a coalition of five goyish kings, and then in the end, the kings were captured, and they're hiding out in a cave. And Yeshua gave orders that they should be executed, and then they hang the bodies up for a while, and then before Shkia, Yeshua said to take the bodies down and bury them inside that cave. So now, according to Rashi, why should that have been necessary? According to Rashi, these are all five goyish kings. Why should it be necessary, according to that, to take the bodies down? So that the Ramban brings that question on Rashi, and he says, in other words, so Rashi, you're implying that the whole concept of not leaving the body overnight applies only to a yid, but we see from that story, and say for Yeshua, that it applies to Lahavdil to a goy as well. Maharshal says, you know what, Rashi might well say there are two reasons. Number one is the reason we're saying over here, because kilo selekim toleri, but there's also a reason. The pasuk goes on to say, v'lois tamei asad moscha, you don't want to cause tumah to proliferate in Eretz Yisrael. And if you have bodies hanging over there, then you're going to have wild animals and birds of prey or whatever are going to tear pieces off of it. And there's going to be tumah all over Eretz Yisrael. And that concept would apply to goyish bodies as well. So Yeshua's reason with the five Goyish kings, with the five Canaanite kings, wouldn't have been on the grounds of Kikil Asalakim Toli, but it would have been because of this other point about not having Tumah in Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara continues. We said in the Mishnah, Omer Rav Meir Chulah. Rav Meir had said that when a person is having tsar, then and you have even when a person is being executed by Beis Din, then the Shechina says Kalani Meiroshi. So the Gemara says, "My Mashma, what does Kalani Meiroshi, Kalani Mizroi mean?" Omer Abaya, Commander Omer Kal Leis. It's like when a person is saying, "I am not light." So I don't feel light in my head. I don't feel light in my arm, but rather I feel a heaviness over there. Omale Rava. So So Rava says, im kain, if that's what it means, now sometimes you would have a person saying something which is not so honorable to themselves, and therefore they might say it in more like a euphemistic kind of way. But Rava is saying, if you don't if you don't really have if you don't really if you're anyway not using really a euphemistic way of saying, then why say I'm not white? Just say straight out, covered alert, I should cover the Israeli by the way. It should just say my head feels heavy, my arm feels heavy. Rather than saying it doesn't feel light, just say straight out, it feels heavy. Ella Omarova, commander Omakili Alma. Rather, it's like when a person is saying the whole world feels light to me. So he doesn't even want to mention anything involving heaviness involving himself. So he's saying the world feels very light compared to me. Which means, in other words, from that we understand automatically that he means to say that I feel heavy. That Tosfos brings actually a girsa that the word was kali with only one lamed, because after all the pasuk says the pasuk says kilo last with two lameds, so one kal would be for the word one would be for the word kal and the other for the word li, but Tosfos says that's not really necessary. The Maharam teaches out what Tosfos means, in other words, that the girsa that Tosfos has in the Gemara over here is kalil li alma. So you have three lamins, two in the word kalil and one in the word li. So the world feels light compared to me, which is, in other words, a euphemistic way of saying I feel heavy. That's according to Rashi. Rabbeinu Hananel explains it a little bit differently, that it means that he's saying that I feel very weak, so to speak, like my spirit feel like my spirit feels very weak. But Hashem is not going to say that openly about himself, but he says a lashon from which we can infer that. The Gemara asks, what do you mean? How can Reb Meir learn this from the word kikilas elikim? We need this word for legufa. We need this pasuk for itself. As we said, that the makalel is chayev, has to be hanged. And as we said, we have the machlokas whether that applies only to a makalel and an oved avodah zarah, or whether it applies more generally. But we need the word kilas for that. How can Reb Meir be learning this drosha about that the shechina says that I feel heavy or I feel weak or whatever? The answer is im kain neimakram mekalel, because then the pasuk could have said mekalel. The pasuk could have said ki mekalel the kim toli, and we would understand mekalel is chayiv to be hanged. My kilolas, why does it say kilolas? So therefore, so we can darshan the kalani meiroshi. The Gemara says ve'im. Fine, so maybe the pasuk is only telling us about how Hashem feels about what's going on over here. Maybe we're not learning any din from it about who gets hanged and who doesn't. The answer is im kain neimakro kilas. Then the pasuk could have said the word kilas with one lamed. My kililas. Instead, it has with two lameds. Shema min atarti. Therefore, it means you can learn both things from it: that a makalel gets hanged, and also that Hashem, so to speak, feels bad about it. Now, we said in the mission of Aloy Zubil Vadhula, we said not only in this case when the body is left over are we over on Aloy Seseh, but also any person who leaves over his mess unburied. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rabbi Yechon, Meshum Rabbi Shimon Yichoi, Minayin Lamelon as Oisoi, as Meisoi, Shoivol Abaloisaseh. How indeed do we know that when a person leaves over his mess and does not bury him as soon as possible, that he's over on a loisaseh?" So Talmud Loimer, after all, the Pasuk is only talking about someone who was executed by Beis Din. How do we know that it applies more generally? Talmud Loimer ki kover tikberenu. Therefore, the Pasuk says, "Bury, you should bury him." From here we learn that a person leaves over his mess, then he's over on a loisaseh. Because the pasuk says this word cover tikberenu, which implies that there's a mitzvah in both cases, and therefore if there's a mitzvah saseh in both cases, there's a mitzvah loisaseh in both cases. In fact, on the face of it, the Gemara is saying that the Gemara is mentioning only a mitzvah saseh, kover tikberenu. How is it saying? Well, over on a loisaseh. So on the side over here, it brings a girsa from Yalkut Shimoni that we know because it says he's over on an esek, because kover tikberenu. And then how do we know that he's over on a loisaseh? Because it says loisol. How do we know he's over on a loisaseh? Because it says loisol and nivlosei. How do we know he's over on an esek? Because kover tikberenu. But then the Oruch HaNer says what it means is, in other words, once we establish that the Esse applies to both of them because of the double expression, cover tikberenu, then automatically we say the lav applies to both of them as well. Ikadamri, another version is Amar Rabbi Yechon Meshum Rabbi Shimon Yechoy Minay Remez Lekvura Min HaTorah Minayin. Where is there a remez in the Torah for the concept that you have to bury a mess? So the first version was, how do we know that if he leaves them over unburied? The second one is, how do we know there's a remez in the Torah in general for the concept that you have to bury mesim? So the Talmud Lamech covered Tikkun Adam. We can remez Lekvura Min HaTorah. So we have a hint in the Torah for the concept of Kvura. And it means that there has to be buried in the ground and so on and so forth. Well, the Gemara says, Omele Shabur Malka Lerav Chama. One time Shabur Malka, he was the king of Persia, there were a couple of kings of Persia by that name, one time says to Rav Chama, Gvura Min HaTorah Minayin. Where in the Torah is there something that bodies have to be buried? Ishtik V'lo Omele V'le Midi, Rav Chama was quiet and he didn't answer anything to the king. Now, in effect, by not answering, amounts to saying that there really isn't a clear source in the Torah for it. Omer of Achaba Yaakov said of Achaba Yaakov said very critically about that. Imser alma biyoda to dipshoi. The world has been given over into the hands of fools. What do you mean? It was very foolish of Rav Chama not to be able to say di boila the mema ki cover. He should have quoted the pasuk ki cover that we're just saying that you have to bury. And why didn't he mention that to the king? I once saw an interesting explanation. Why is Rav Achaba Yaakov so upset about it? Because actually, the Persian religion of that time, the Zoroastrian religion, one of their beliefs was that the ground is sacred, is holy, and you shouldn't really be burying mesim in it. We even find there are places in the Gemara where it mentions where sometimes they would dig up mesim. So now, if King Shabur, the king of the entire Persia and Babel, is asking, where is there a source for kavura? So if Rav Chama is not going to tell him an actual source in the Torah for it, this is very dangerous. Now this king might say, well, you know what? If your Torah anyway doesn't say it's not required, then I'm going to outlaw it. So now Rav Achaba Yaakov is very upset. So how could Rav Chama miss this opportunity? So the answer is, for Rav Chama, because these figures, because if I mentioned to the king the word cover, then the king would say, fine, what it means is you have to put the mess in an oren. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to bury him in the ground. Okay, the Gemara says, what about tikburenu? We just said that it says ki cover tikburenu, the double expression. The answer is, lemashmalei, fine, Rav Chama figured the king is not going to accept that concept that the double expression in the pasuk is meant to teach us something extra. So therefore, he didn't want to bring that drosha. So the Gemara says, well, practically speaking, v'neimalei midi ikbur tzadiki. V'neima midi ikbur tzadiki. Why doesn't he tell him? Listen, we have all these examples in Chumash where tzadikim are buried. We find Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov are all buried. So isn't that a strong enough proof that kvura is required? The answer is, you could say minhoga ba'alma. You could say, fine, it's a minhag that people have to bury. That doesn't show that it's absolutely required al pi Torah. Okay, what about midikavre? What about that it says that Hashem buried Moshe? Because when it says Vayikbar Oisei Bagai, so one explanation of the word Vayikbar Oisei is that Hashem buried him. Wouldn't that be a proof that burial is required? And again, the answer is Lelishtani Mimenhoga. Fine, you could say Hashem didn't want that Moshe should be treated everywhere from any different thing than anybody else. But that doesn't mean that it's an absolute requirement. Okay, the Gemara says Toshma. He could bring a proof from a story in Nach. You have a story involving a son of Yerovam. Yerovam had a son named Avia. Yerovam sends his wife disguised to Achia Ashiloni to ask for a nevuah whether the child will recover. And Achia tells her instead a very harsh nevuah that your whole family is going to be destroyed because of your husband's avodah zarah and all the other avodas that he did. But in the middle of the nevuah, Achia says, "V'softalai, as far as this boy of yours, v'softalai koisav kavru oisai, all the Jewish people will mourn for him and they will bury him." Because he goes on to say he did one good thing. Rashi brings on the pasuk over there from other places, from Gemaras and Midrashim, that this Avia, like this Yerovam, had outlawed anybody from the Aseres HaShavatim going to Yerushalayim to celebrate the Shalosh Regalim. This Avia was one of the guards assigned to one of these guard posts, and he left his guard post and went to Yerushalayim himself and allowed other people to do that as well. So for that one good thing that he did, then he was zoicha to a proper honorable burial. Anyway, the point is the pasuk says v'kavru oisei. So why doesn't Rav Chama bring a proof from that? The answer is again below the shtanim minhaga. Fine, what Hashem means with that nevuah is that Avia will be treated like people are normally treated, and his body won't just be thrown out for wild animals to eat or whatever. That doesn't show that it's required al pi Torah to do it. Okay, another one. Yirmiyah warns the people of his time and then before the Churban Bayis Rishon
Lo yisoftu, they won't be mourned for. Velo yikavru, they won't be buried. L'domina pnei ha'adama yiyu, their bodies will become waste on the surface of the ground. In other words, the bodies will just be left there unburied, and wild animals and whatever will eat them. So we see that the pasuk is implying that people are supposed to be buried. And again, the answer is d'lashtana. That's what it means. In other words, Yirmiyah is saying the rishayim of that time are going to be killed during the, or are going to be killed or otherwise die during the time before the korban, and their bodies are going to be left unburied, which is different than the normal minhag. That still doesn't necessarily show that there's an actual chiyuv in the Torah to bury bodies. So again, therefore, Rav Chama figured he doesn't really have a solid enough proof to bring to Shabur or Malka. In the end, though, we say the fact is it does say cover tikburenu, and the fact is we know that such double expressions in the Torah are meant to teach us something, and therefore there is in fact a chiyuv of kvura, and that if a person is not, and if a person doesn't bury his mess, then he's over on a loisa, as we said in the Mishnah. Okay, so now the Gemara asks Siboyelahu. Here's a question:
So
kvura
what do we know
mishum
that
bizyoinu
it
hu?
applies to the goyim?
So does it apply to the goyim? So that's a good question. We did say before that there were two reasons why to bury bodies, even of goyim. We said there's two reasons why to bury the body right away. One is because a person is made b'tzelem elokim, and maybe that applies primarily to Jews. The other reason is to prevent tumah from proliferating, and therefore that might therefore that would apply to goyim as well, because their bodies are matame as well. But it is true, there is actually some discussion about the question, and we're going to learn in more detail in the Gemara over the next couple of days about the dinim of having hanah from a mess. There is actually quite a bit of discussion about whether the iser of having hanah from a mess applies to a goyish, a dead body. That's negeya as far as organ transplants. It's negeya as far as anatomy classes and all kinds of interesting things like that, whether in fact there is an iser to have enough from them, because instead you should be burying them, or whether in fact that doesn't apply. Yeah, it's actually there is actually some discussion about that point.
But I thought that we said that the goyim are not matame, that their
Goyish
bodies are
bodies are
not
matame
matame.
b'maga over masa. If you touch a goy, you touch a kazayas or whatever appropriate part of a goyish body, then you become tame. You carry it even without touching it. There's machlokas tanoim whether goy is whether the kvarim whether a goy's body is matame ba'oihel. If you're under the same roof as it, or if you overshadow it, or whatever, whether you're tame. That's machlokas tanoim. But as far as maga or masa, everybody agrees that a goy's body is matame like that as well.
But the goyim are allowed to walk on Harabais.
No, they're not. They shouldn't be walking on Harabais anyway, especially because there are areas of Harabais that are supposed to be off limits to them anyhow, anything beyond the Chil. Unfortunately, nobody nowadays has the power to prevent that, but yeah. All right, so the Gemara says, Iboilahu. Fundamentally, what's the idea behind burying a body? So we just established that there is a mitzvah in the Torah to bury bodies, even though Rav Choma could not find a solid proof for Shabu Malka for that. But what is the basic idea behind the concept of burial anyway? Is it mishum bizyoinahu? Is it because of the bizoyin of the mess? Because eventually the body is going to rot and then burst open and whatever, and it's going to be a terrible bizoyin for the mess. Oy mishum kap. Or is it for the sake of a kapora for the mess that this way you're lowering him down into the ground, and you're bringing him down, you're so to speak degrading him kind of by putting him in the ground, and maybe to a certain extent that's a kapora for him. Now Tosfos points out there's no question there is kapora involved. But the question is whether it's also, is it exclusively because of kapara, is there also the factor of bizoyin? Tosfos, with that said, though, Tosfos says we don't necessarily mean the bizoyin of the mess. Rashi is saying the bizoyin that we'd be talking about over here is of the mess himself, that the body would decay and burst open and whatever, and it would be a shameful thing. Tosfos says that no, the bizoyin we're talking about is actually the bizoyin of the family. The mess himself, what would he care one way or the other? Okay. So anyway, so that's the question. Is it primarily because of bizoyin or primarily because of kapara? So the Gemara says, my nafkamina, well, what's the practical difference? And the answer is, what if a person gives instructions before he dies, he doesn't want to be buried? If you say it's a matter of bizoyin, he doesn't have the ability to say that. The fact is, it's still a bizoyin for his relatives, if nothing else. So therefore, we would have to bury him regardless. The e amit mishum kaparahu, but if you say that the primary purpose is kapara, After all, he's saying, I don't want the kapara. So meaning, in other words, therefore, so he's saying, I don't want the kapara. So therefore, maybe we don't have to give him that kapara. Maybe the kapara wouldn't even help for him anyway. Rashi says, even if they buried him, he still wouldn't be miskaper. The Yad Ramah explains a little differently. Fine, maybe he would get the kapara if they buried him, but maybe we shouldn't be obligated to because he said that not. So the Gemara goes through the same proofs that we did before. Tashma amid ikbur tzaddiki. We see that the tzaddikim Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov are buried. V'yamet mishum kapara. If you're going to say the main purpose of burial is kapara, tzaddiki l'chapara tzrichi. Do Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, great caliber tzaddikim like them, do they need kapara? And the answer is ain. Yeah. After all, the pasuk says there's no tzaddik in the world who always does good and never yechta, never misses the mark a little bit. So, but Dakos, they had something that they needed kapara for. Okay, the Gemara says, Toshma, let's try to bring another proof, again, from that story of the son of Yerovam, where the Pasuk says, V'softer like Koyster of a Kovroi, so where the Navi says to Yerovam's wife, the mother of the sick boy, that the whole Jewish people will mourn for him and bury him. If you're going to tell me the purpose of burials for kapara, why shouldn't the rest of the family be able to have that kapara as well? Here, Achi Ashiloni is telling her that only from your whole family, only this one will have a proper burial, and everybody else is going to be killed, and everybody else assassinated, and whatever, and their bodies are not going to be buried. If the whole point is kapara, shouldn't the rest of the family have that kapara as well? And the answer is exactly that. Hai did tzaddiku to have a kapara. This child, this young man, was relative to his family, was a tzaddik, so he deserves to have that kapara. Hanach lo halevelu kapara. But here, the Novi is telling her that the rest of the family, being Erishoyim, are not going to be zoicha to that kind of kapara. Okay, the Gemara says Toshma. Well, again, we have the pasuk from Yirmiyah. Lo yisoftu v'lo yikovru. We said they won't be mourned and they won't be buried. If it's a matter of kapara, they should have that kapara. And again, the answer is delight to have a little kapara. Hashem is warning them through the Navi, if they don't do tshuva, they're not going to have that kapara because they're going to die as Rishoyim, and they're not going to have that kapara. Okay, so the Gemara has not come to a conclusion about that, but then the Gemara is going to discuss now another point about the hesbid, about the mourning for a mess, and then eventually we're going to revisit, and then after that we're going to revisit this matter of burial, whether it's because of a kapara or not. So the Gemara starts off so you know what, we'll leave that discussion for tomorrow, about the Hespin.